they'll ask you just say something stupid. And we are live on a Friday. Hope everybody's having a good day. This is Baldwin and the Berg. I am Austin Bechtold.
I'm Nathan Breisinger.
And I'm Andrew Goldvash.
And we're going at it again. Episode 3, edition number 3, Baldwin and the Berg. Pretty good to be back on
purple,
the air.
Purple Rain decided to rain
purple,
in a parade.
Yeah, Purple Rain decided to last 7 minutes to delay us going on the air about eight minutes late.
We said we'll wait after the 3-minute song, then a 7-minute song appears.
We're really expecting that. So current time now, 10:38, as we start with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now 0-3 for the first time since, I believe, 2013 when the team did not make the playoffs.
Only time under Tomlin.
No Steeler team that started 0-3 has ever made the playoffs. And without your franchise quarterback, your leader, your stability on offense, what do the Steelers do from here? After a loss in San Francisco where Mason Rudolph was okay, a lot better in the second half. The offense started to pick it up in the second half. But Minkah Fitzpatrick made his debut. He looked good. He played pretty well. True. Now, one player that did not, James Conner. Do I have to go on my rant about James Conner?
I mean, if you feel like
it. How about I just cut it a little short? My feeling with James Conner, I think he's good. I think he's a good back. I don't think he fits the style that the Steelers like to play. I don't think he fits the style of blocking that the Steelers usually like. Le'Veon was perfect for the way that the Steelers like to block, like to go through their schemes, like to go through their offense. And who's the perfect guy that is just like Le'Veon? Not exactly, but has similar characteristics.
A poor man's Le'Veon.
A poor man's Le'Veon. Jalen Samuels. Yeah. And for him not to get a touch.
Yeah,
not I don't get know. A touch in San Francisco.
He's not even back.
He's not even on the rushing. He's not even on the chart.
Why? Yeah, Benny Snell got more carries than him.
Exactly. I don't know.
I don't get it. I don't trust Conner in key situations, as we saw with his fumble in the fourth quarter. I don't think
cost the game.
I don't think he's the workhorse that Steeler fans think he is. But he made the Pro Bowl last year. He made the Pro Bowl.
It's a voters.
Half the league makes the Pro Bowl. Okay, you do realize that, right? People drop out of the Pro Bowl time in and time again, and it's not like the running back position. There's basically only 32 guys that can make it. It's not wide receiver where there's two or three guys from either each team that if you're good enough could make the Pro Bowl.
I will say Conner is a good back to punch the ball into the end zone. He's the type of guy.
He's a goal line back.
Yeah, he's a goal line back. He's a little Garrett Blunt. I mean, he's strong. He's a good physical back. The one thing, though, I will say I'm impressed with, even though he hasn't shown it too much through the first three games, that I've seen a little bit, his explosiveness after getting the ball. Even though he hasn't gotten much of blocking,
Listen.
There's no acceleration from
3 years ago. He's much quicker once he gets the ball than he was. But he is much quicker. He's much stronger. He's slimmer. He's not the big back, but he can still punch it in when he gets down to the goal line. But the Steelers haven't given him the shot.
But we can't get down to the goal line. But we need a solid running back to get us down to the goal line in the first place, which is why Jalen Samuels should get those touches and then throw James Conner in to go punch it in for a touchdown.
If James Conner was so good in short yardage situations, why has Benny Snell and many third and ones gone in instead for him?
Benny Snell is also what James Conner was before Nate said it, he slimmed down, was a little bit quicker. Like, Benny Snell doesn't have the acceleration, but he's more of a tough, hard runner, able to run people over but he's not that fast. So people just get on him quickly and are able to take him down.
No, he's a bigger back to be able to basically just run through the line and be able to get yards when needed. My thing with Conner that really, it kind of bothers me, kind of frustrates me. It doesn't matter what the blocking usually is. If he's running up the middle, he doesn't wait. He doesn't wait one bit to see if a hole's going to open.
He just runs.
His decision-making might not be good, but I think he has the skills to be your number one back and be there for a while.
I do agree that they
need to give Jalen Samuels more time and more touches, definitely.
I don't like Connor's lateral quickness. I don't necessarily like his speed. I know it's better. It's better than what it was.
Doesn't mean it's good.
I also don't like his ability to catch the ball out of the backfield, and he can't make a guy miss. He can't break a tackle. If you go low on James Conner, he will go down.
He's destined to go down.
So that's what worries me with Conner. I don't trust him late in games, and we saw that last year when
Jacksonville.
Where we barely gave the ball to him in the fourth quarter just because Ben really didn't trust him along with the rest of the offense. They didn't really feel comfortable using him in a lot of situations and scenarios. And even though it's early in the season, we're starting to see that's more further clarity that, you know, they've tried to give Connor a little bit more leeway. We're like, okay, Connor, another year of you being the starter, we're gonna lay off the leash a little bit. We're gonna give you more of an opportunity, especially late in games. And so far, in a close game with the Steelers, which with getting five turnovers. And you score,
and not winning.
You can't win. Well, first off, getting what, three turnovers, four turnovers
in the span
early
of like
on?
In the span of like what?
Yeah, that was
five,
like
six minutes.
The first quarter,
scoring only 6 points. Okay, I don't care.
Or do you think that leans a bit on like Rudolph, or do you think that just our receivers with not being able to get open? Like,
it relies on the whole offense in general. Now the fact that the Steelers were set up in great positions every single time they got the ball to go and score. It falls on Rudolph. Now, you also got to remember, though, first start for Rudolph in his career. You got to help him out.
Yeah, but do you also think the decision makings on the coordinators, do you think, like, Rudolph only threw, what, two passes beyond the line of scrimmage or from the area around the line of scrimmage?
And they both were touchdowns.
Do you think Rudolph had the chance to, like, they weren't giving him plays to throw downfield? I mean, I know he could have. There was routes being run downfield, but they were only giving him certain routes that were short routes, short running routes out in the
and
flat.
And no one could break a tackle. No one could get open.
Huh? Yeah.
They really did not let him throw the ball down the field, at least until the second half. And you saw that whenever they did allow him to throw the ball down the field, they did open the playbook up a little bit more. The offense started to come alive. The offense started to blossom a little better. It really showed what it has been in the past. You saw, Juju be able to, run vertically. And
he loves long plays.
Yeah, Juju with a nice long play, really getting the offense going.
Deontay Johnson, is that his first? Is that his first like career touchdown right there?
It's his second. Deontay Johnson on a double move, going to the end zone.
It was a double move.
I just feel that with this offense, I understand limiting Rudolph at least early on. Okay, I get that, but I also want to know, he's been in the system.
Let him play.
You got to let him play. Why not throw him in there? You're already 0-2. You're on the road. Why not just throw him in there?
Why not
see what the kid's got?
I do understand if you want to hold him back a little bit because, as Nate said, the game was close. You don't want to have one necessary error that can basically just turn the tides on the team and make the game out of hand, which is basically what Connor did. But there's not much... I wouldn't say there's that much blame you got to put on Rudolph. I think there's obviously some because he's the quarterback and he's the one that's ultimately got to get it done. But just thinking the circumstances, an improved San Francisco team. Steelers always struggle on the West Coast. 0-2 record as it is. Not having Ben, the emotional letdown of not having Ben. I don't want to excuse anything, but
it was kind of a wash season the second Ben went down.
It's somewhat understandable what happened and what's going on with this team with no Ben. It's kind of like when Rodgers went down for Green Bay last season. Mm-hmm.
They won a couple
Rodgers,
games.
When Peyton went down for the Colts years ago, you're going to win a couple games, but you also realize what your team is when you lose your franchise quarterback. You realize that, we have a bunch of guys, we have a bunch of pieces. Now, they might be good pieces, but if you don't have the guy that can anchor all of those pieces, you realize that your team is not as great as you really thought it is. And that's why Green Bay realized that when they had no Rodgers. That's why they went out and got guys like Preston Smith.
Za'Darius Smith. Amos.
Using all their draft picks on defensive guys.
And now look at their team. Their team's great. I mean, yeah, they may
lost
have lost.
To Philadelphia last night, but they're still – I think Matt LaFleur's doing a pretty good job. I think him and Rodgers, getting out the kinks a little early on, but their relationship's working pretty well right now. So it's something to watch. It's something pretty interesting to see what the Steelers will do from here they host the Bungles on Monday Night Football.
But I also wanted to touch on, speaking of the piece that the Steelers got for the bench trade, let's talk about their defense. Their defense played much better in this game. They keep improving each game. Minka coming in this game, Fitzpatrick, he had an interception, he had a forced fumble.
Two turnovers.
The guy was playing pretty well. I mean,
he was genuinely, when I watched the game, he was genuinely all over the football field.
He was all over the field.
He was all over the place. Devin Bush, two fumble recovers.
Seven sacks with three assists. Ten total.
Yeah, I mean, the defense played much better, especially with the run defense. And again, 24 points to a 49ers team that, you know, was scoring a good amount of points to start the season. Pretty good. I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo was lighting up defenses, so Steelers defense definitely improved. I think they continue to improve.
Like,
they definitely have to have a big game against the Bengals. Andy Dalton
is
second in the league in passing yards, 979 passing yards.
Pretty crazy.
Isn't that something? I mean, he's got his two receivers in John Ross and Tyler Boyd, combining so far for 542 receiving yards this year. But the secondary is going to have a handful for them. I think the Steelers' rush defense will do fine.
I mean,
their D line, I think, will play well.
Stephon Tuitt had a monster game.
He continues to show that he can have monster games game in and game out. So
one thing that I noticed that, I'd say I kind of like it. Dante Moncrief, healthy scratch, going from a starter to not even playing. You know, when you can't help your quarterback out and the ball goes right through your hands and you get an interception, and you can't help Ben out and. Any game that Ben played, it kind of is, you know. Would I say deserved? You haven't earned it, Moncrief. Why? I don't even think you earned being named a starter in the first place. To now being benched, 2-year contract. Steelers can't cut him. We're gonna have to pay him next year anyway. So something to watch out for. Will Dante Moncrief bounce back anytime? Will he be in the lineup anytime soon?
I think he'll have to be. I mean,
he'll have to be. He's a big receiver. They brought him in to be their number two guy.
But clearly that
hasn't shown it.
Hasn't shown anything. So with the game being Monday night at home against Cincinnati, Steelers' first practice was on Thursday, and the Thursday injury report had multiple guys not practicing again with the team being banged up. Joe Hayden with his shoulder injury did not practice. Roosevelt Nix with a knee is going to be out Monday night. Vince Williams has a hamstring. He's not expected to practice. He might not even play. Chickalo has a foot injury, did not practice as well. Vance McDonald's shoulder is in a sling, and his status is up in the air for Monday night. But Mike Tomlin says that he expects he will play. Mark Barron and Marquise Pouncey got the Veterans Day off. And Jerome Elliott, linebacker called up from the practice squad with a hamstring injury, was just added. He was limited. That's your injury report. Joe Hayden is more than likely expected to play. Should be good to go. The only guy that should be out should be Nix, with potentially Vince Williams coming back.
And I was going to say, since Vince McDonald's banged up, I mean, they did trade for Vinette, right? They did require him.
Steelers made a trade for Nick Vinette. From Seattle, trading a 2020 fifth round pick to go and get him. Steelers, I don't know what we're doing.
I haven't heard too much about this guy. I think he's like the second or third string tight end on the Seahawks.
He was a third round pick out of Ohio State a couple years back, but
I still think he's second or third string.
He will be. I think McDonald more than likely. I don't know, with his shoulder in a sling.
It's not a promising sight.
It doesn't sound like he would play.
No,
but again, why go get a guy if like?
But he also has an extra day. He also has an extra day of rest with the game being Monday night. Why get a guy like Vinette? Because you have Xavier Grimble on IR now, and you have Zach Gentry, who is, you know, a rookie, not proven guy. You don't really know what you're going to get for him. He was only active in the San Francisco game and active the first two games. So, I understand the trade. I understand why they made it. Do I think it'll be beneficial?
I think so.
I think Vinette's he's a red zone target. He's 6'6". Pretty decent tight end in the red zone. Now Will Disley took away most of the snaps from him in Seattle, but I think he's a guy that can come in.
I think whenever Disley went down last year, I think Vinette was like, I'm pretty sure he was their main guy.
He stepped in. I think Vinette can be all right. I think he could be, you know, I think he'd be a solid backup for the Steelers. I think the Steelers were looking for a number two tight end basically for months ever since training camp, because they, I think we all know that McDonald always gets hurt, and Xavier Grimble just,
you know, is Xavier Grimble.
Can't get it done, fumbling in the 1 yard line through the end zone. So Vinette's numbers on the year, basically non-existent. He's only caught four passes in three games. Only one against the Steelers for 13 yards in Pittsburgh. So what are we going to get from Vinette? I think we'll get a guy that can he can block, he can catch. He's more than likely going to be a red zone guy for Mason Rudolph. And as we saw with Vance McDonald when he was in there, Mason Rudolph likes his tight ends. So if there could be a guy that Rudolph can go to in the red zone, like he did with McDonald, there could be some success to be found there. And it could be a nice trade for the Steelers. I just don't like trading draft picks. I don't.
And we know.
I say it every week. But now you don't have a first.
Which is good, could be a top 10, definitely at this point in the
you
season.
You don't have a fifth. And you don't have a third, which you traded to Denver in the Devin Bush trade in the draft last year. Now, more than likely, Steelers could get a comp pick. You know, could be okay in terms of that. He'll probably get a Le'Veon Bell third-round comp pick. But still, that pick is basically a fourth-round pick when it's all said and done with the comp picks going around. So I just think what the Steelers must think is their team is – they must think the opposite of what Green Bay thought.
Yeah.
Their team is good enough. The personnel around Mason Rudolph is good enough that, you know,
they can still push.
They can compete this year. And the fact that most of these guys will be returning next year with, I mean, no, we don't have to worry about signing Sean Davis now with Micah Fitzpatrick. We got Devin Bush. We got our linebackers. The only one that we might have to replace in the defense is Bud Dupree, which...
not a whole lot of a replacement.
No, not much.
I mean, a bunch of missed sacks. I mean, what are you wasting there?
You could even replace him internally with Ola, Danny, or maybe even Chickalo. Who knows? But the talent that the Steelers think they will have around Ben Roethlisberger, they think will be good enough, especially boosting it with Fitzpatrick being here for years to come. And Nick Vinette going to be a free agent, but good chance as a number two tight end that they sign him. They sign him back. So when I look at it, I like the personnel the Steelers have. I just don't love it, and I feel that if they're gonna take the next step, what are they gonna need to do? What are they gonna have to add, or do they have to add anything? Is it just in terms of players stepping up?
Yeah,
that's really what.
Again,
it is.
I mean, we talked about last week. How many first round picks were on the defense? 10?
Nine. And like some people just have like
there's
like,
a
like,
ton of talent on that defense. Like, yeah. It's time for like guys to step up.
Especially in my.
It's
budget.
Time for the running backs to get going. James Conner. There's different guys that have a lot of talent on this team. And it's just when will they step up?
Well, just think about it. There's a first round pick at every single position, other than. Every starter is a first-round pick other than Steve Nelson, Javon Hargrave, and Stephon Tuitt, with Artie Burns being the only backup who's been a first-round pick.
But Artie Burns is Artie Burns. I mean,
Artie
dude
Burns
gets, dude
is
gets
Burns. He's shown.
I remember when Artie Burns was like, he wasn't bad, and I was actually like excited for Artie Burns. Nice, long, lanky guy who can help defend.
He can still run. I just worry about the mental side of the game with Artie Burns. It's just a confident shot.
Is his confidence gone to the point where you can't even get it back, and he's just a lost cause at this point?
That's what worries me. All right, so that's the Steelers. Monday night, Cincinnati, at home. Steelers in primetime. Steelers love primetime.
Steelers love, yeah.
Steelers don't lose at home on Monday night.
Well.
Steelers don't lose in primetime. At least past has shown it.
Yeah.
So now we'll move on to the other football team who's...
playing at Heinz Field.
Playing at Heinz Field, and actually, their last game at Heinz Field... went pretty well.
Exciting one.
Pitt Panthers. Nate, take it away.
Well,
take it away, Penny.
The Pitt Panthers come out with a big win over number 15 ranked UCF, 35-34, with now the well-known Pitt Special. Thanks to Aaron Matthews and Kenny Pickett.
Pitt Special. Kenny Heisman.
I will say that is one of the most insane play calls I've seen from Pitt.
It was one hell of a call.
I'll give Narduzzi credit.
But it was Mark Whipple. You think it was Whipple, or do you think Narduzzi made the call?
I think they all.
Whipple brought it up, but it gets past Narduzzi, and they both agreed on it. And I mean, sitting there watching the play,
my heart dropped.
It's like it was right down in front of my eyes, just like, what is happening? And then he caught it. Kenny Pickett, anyone catches the ball. And I will say, Narduzzi, yeah, a lot of people gave him a lot of crap from the Penn State game because of the 1 yard line play. I will say he definitely had some good calls throughout that game. There was the fourth and two where they sprung Griffin Stewart out, Nike Griffin Stewart out for
Penn
like
State
a
game?
Yeah, for like yeah, a 20 yeah, yard catch on the fourth down.
I think they went play action.
Got
was
to
yeah, yeah they went play action. That paid off. The Pitt special paid off, and they were going to win at this game. Last game, Narduzzi said on the 1 yard line, "Oh, we needed two scores, so that's why we went for the field goal on the fourth down. Whatever. We wanted to win the game." Well, they actually went to win the game this time. They came up big.
In defense, I mean, Pitt had a chance to like win the game at the end of that Penn State game. I mean, they had a deep ball chance like to go in there and win that football game.
Yeah, I will say, the players for Pitt are really playing their hearts out right now. I mean. Yeah, they went up 21-0, then they let up 31 unanswered points, but they still won the game. You got to give those guys a lot of credit for sticking in there.
We were all there. I think we all had our doubts once Pitt started, here comes UCF rolling off the points.
I also do want to say this. There was a surprising amount of UCF fans there. I did not expect –
There were a lot of UCF
fans. I did not expect that many people to be there for UCF.
I mean – And I think that's what drives up the intensity in a game whenever there's a lot of opposing fans in the stadium.
I can say there were quite a bit of UCF fans in our section. I mean, brother, they're like some of the worst fans I think I've ever seen. They're crazy.
They just flock. I don't know.
They're crazy.
Remember, whenever there's a team that's usually not very good, kind of like the Cubs fans, the fans, they start coming out of nowhere. Like, where'd you guys come from? Kind of like the Cubs fans at PNC Park that just showed up out of nowhere in 2015.
They just probably bought their Cubs jersey. Like, oh, Chris Bryant, let me buy his jersey. Let's go to the game.
Oh, Chris Bryant, that guy. Oh, Rizzo, he's great too.
Oh, Addison Russell, hey, he's pretty cool.
Yeah, I can't really rip on Cubs fans much because they have a World Series in recent memory and we really doubt. But
actually, yeah, we can, as we will get to later in our
show. We'll get to that a little later on, but... I think one big thing that was kind of shown in this Pitt win, 21-0, then going down 31-21 or whatever the score may be in the whole game, I think that the team really played for Narduzzi. I think the team knew, how bad this is going to look for our coach. 21-0. We're rolling on UCF. Yeah. We're doing great.
Everything was going well. All sides – of the ball, special teams, defense, and offense, block punt.
That block punt was that's the first block punt I think I've ever seen.
Two interceptions. I mean, they were getting it going there.
But they would have been. We would have made a mockery of Pat Narduzzi after that if he didn't come back and win that game. I mean, let's just be completely honest here. I get it. I get the opponent. I get.
UCF's
a good team.
They're one of the highest scoring offenses in the game.
Haven't lost since 2016.
Yeah,
it was like
regular season.
Snapped here at Heinz, baby.
Yeah, it's
overrated.
I don't know. Pitt just loves to beat teams that are good.
They know all about it.
Do you think that's a credit to Narduzzi's coaching, or do you think that's just how Pitt?
I think that's just
the Pitt way. Because I mean, you have Miami, you have Clemson, and now you add UCF.
I think it is. A lot on Narduzzi, but it's a lot on the players. I think Narduzzi gets his players fired up for these games to say we are the underdog coming into this game. You know what to do, especially in front of the Heinz Field crowd. They did it against Miami 2 years ago. They did it here against UCF. I mean, they've showed that they have a lot of resiliency too. And I think Narduzzi, this comes down to a lot on Narduzzi. How he prepares his players for the game.
Narduzzi gets those guys up for big games. He just does. And even if Pitt doesn't win, the game's close. Now, Pitt might not beat a North Carolina.
Which they should.
Syracuse or whatever.
Yeah, now watch us. I was talking to my dad about this. Shout out, Dad, if you're listening. He's like, yeah. Watch Pitt lose to Delaware now and not have us not win a game.
Well,
now.
I don't know. Last time Pitt played Delaware, in 2014,
I know, but like
62
that's
to nothing.
I know, but like, wouldn't that be a classic Pitt thing to do?
Yeah, that's actually one of our buddies mentioned, wouldn't it be a classic Pitt thing to do to go up, So they were or the game was what, like 31-28? Tie the game. Or no, get the touchdown, make the play, get the touchdown.
Miss the field goal.
Miss the extra point.
Miss the extra point. Speaking or of, make the extra point and then lose in overtime. It would be a pith thing to do.
Speaking of, can we get Kespin like some kicking help? Like,
yeah, I don't know what's going on.
I think right, I've been talking about this. I think for a college player, he missed that field goal against Penn State, which, I mean, yeah, it's a field goal
You think that's just destroyed his confidence?
Yeah, it destroyed his confidence because, yeah, I mean, he should have made the field goal, but it was in a very tough place to play, and he I don't know, just to make a field goal like that, I mean, and miss it, it destroys your confidence, and then what, he missed, what, three? Two
oh, wait, let me UCF check. Game. Yeah, it's two.
But besides the game, Pitt has some key players to look at. Kenny Pickett, for example, he's been unreal so far this year. I think a complete and utter difference from last year, I mean, where they can barely throw the ball this year.
Now they're
Kenny Pickett, he is 16th in the nation in passing yards, 1,102 passing yards.
My boy Kenny.
Give a lot of credit to Kenny Pickett also, and Mark Whipple for coming in and turning around this passing offense. I do think the running game, similar to the Steelers, still needs to
get going,
be more productive.
I mean,
A.J. Davis in this game had 65 yards and a touchdown. I mean, Kenny Pickett also,
I mean, his scrambling ability showed too. Yeah. I mean,
he's showing a lot of
versatility. You got it, Nate. I got you.
Holy crap. Versatility. But Kenny Pickett is definitely showing he can win games now too, which is a good thing.
He can't just put up stats.
He led that team down the field in, what, the final 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Nice throw and grab by Taysier Mack down into the 10. Kenny Pickett's just showing a lot of promise and potential right now going into the rest of the season, into the middle stretch of the season. Also, on the defensive side of the ball, I wanted to touch on Jalen Twyman, who's been all over the place again.
He's a dog.
5.5 sacks on the season, I think, and another one against UCF. Fourth in the nation right now. This guy's been everywhere. He's only a sophomore. He's been their top guy. I mean, with Rashad Weaver and Kayshon Camp going down, he's really stepped up and played a pivotal role in this defense.
Yep, pretty good for a sophomore.
Yeah.
Pretty good for a sophomore.
And speaking of that, I mean, yeah, we got the sacks too. I mean, but the pressure on that on Dylan Gabriel was absolutely unreal. I mean, yeah, I mean, he ended up still throwing for a good bit. I mean, do you want to know what his stats were before coming into Pitt? He had 9 touchdowns, 0 picks. And Pitt managed to get pressure on
It's a lot about the pressure.
It got the pressure, made him feel uncomfortable in a hostile environment, and was able to make him force a couple interceptions, which is all we needed.
UCF ran a lot of early, bunch of screen plays. Yeah, I was confused
because going into the half, like the last 5 minutes in the second quarter, I'm like, what's UCF doing? I'm confused. I know there's going to be adjustments made at halftime.
They were running a lot of,
you know, read options and handoffs
and dudes who were faster.
And not going for it. And then come second half, they were thrown downfield and burning.
They were pit secondary. Jason
Pinnock, he was so beat up, and yet he's still trying to cover, like, Gabriel Davis.
Made
and, like,
a pick in the end
Trey
zone,
Nixon.
Though.
Yeah, he did make – that was the pick before he got hurt, but again – I mean, UCF had two dudes with over 100 yards receiving on us. I mean,
yeah. Again, resiliency. Resiliency. Came back from, I mean, you know, being 31 unanswered points. That's tough.
I mean, like that's
UCF was on a roll there.
I mean, that punt return. I mean, I thought that was a killer. It was just such a killer. Because like just running, just watching that dude just run through our entire team, like not a single person was able to tackle.
That deflates a whole team. Right. I mean, confidence wise.
One thing kind of cool point out. Saw a video, Aaron Matthews in 2013, and Clairton actually ran the Pitt special before it was.
So
the Philly special.
Wait, did we call it the Clairton special now?
Well, I don't know.
Or the Aaron Matthews special.
It was a different variation, but basically the same, you know, it was the same result on the
play. Also, speaking of Pitt, shout out Nick Patty for doing a solid job whenever Pickett went down. I mean, of course, that's a crucial drive in the game, and he's managed, you know, get away from a sack and then throw a nice touchdown to
and also his receivers got open
to Butler Jenkins.
Yep.
That was very good for Nick Patty to step in, but Philly special. Everybody saw. I know I said it in the stands. As soon as Pickett moved, as soon as he started standing at the line, everybody just started
I didn't know what was coming because I'm sitting there because I couldn't see Pickett really move, and then I saw him do it, and then all hell just broke loose.
Yeah, if you're UCF and you've heard about that play, obviously I believe you would probably have watched the Super Bowl and everybody knows the play. The fact that you see it and you don't realize it, you don't realize what is happening. I mean, come on. It's such a famous play now.
Like, it's literally one of the most famous plays in Super Bowl history.
The fact that you did not realize that it was voted, like, what, number 9?
Top 100 plays of all time?
Actually, I don't know. So. What was 9? I think 9 might have been the Minneapolis Miracle.
It was up there near the top 10.
It was up
there near the top 10. Yep. Good plays. Good players. Kenny Pickett coming back and making
good
the
game.
Play.
That makes for one hell of a game.
All right. Now, Nate, move on to Penn State really quick.
We're going to move on to Penn State. Penn State coming in off their bye week. They're 3-0, ranked 12, taking on Maryland. Maryland's 2-1.
But they're an explosive team.
Yeah, they've shown to score points so far this year. But Penn State's outscoring opponents 141-30. Does Maryland have a chance in this game is the question.
Their offense has been running it up lately.
Yeah. I mean, you got the four different backs that can play for Penn State. Sean Clifford has shown a lot of spark for that team. But Pitt held them when they played them. But I don't know. Penn State still so well coached by James Franklin. Does Maryland have a chance?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's like very similar. I'd say it's more like a 25-75. I mean, Penn State, if they're as good as a team, they should win this game. Penn State should win this game. But do I feel like Maryland has a chance to pull an upset? Probably not. I mean,
the one.
I mean, I think it's going to be an exciting game. I mean, I feel like it might be high scoring in my opinion. I mean, I don't know how good Penn State's defense has been as of late. I mean, judging by who they've played as opponents, I mean, this will be their first true real offense that they played in Maryland.
The one thing that Penn State really relies on is their special teams. They rely on, you know, good field position thanks to KJ Hamler. And when Pitt played them, Kirk Christodoulou did a very good job of neutralizing his running ability, not giving really him a chance. And Penn State also has two different kickers that they rely on big time. Jordan Stout from beyond 50 yards, which we saw 57-yard field goal before the end of the half against Pitt. And then Jake Pinniger within 50. And also Blake Gillikin, their punter, you know, he gives them a lot of chances, you know, pushes back teams' offenses.
Puts them in there at opposing 10 or like at the 1.
Yeah, they do a good job on special teams up there at Penn State College. But it will be an interesting game. It's a Friday night game tonight. So we'll see how that one turns out. Now, switching on to another more local college football team, West Virginia, starting the season 3-1.
Shout out Yost.
Starting the season 3-1, they head into their bye week. In the first week, they took on James Madison, beating them 20-13, then lost to Kelly Bryant in Missouri. Then they beat an ACC team in NC State, and then just came off a win against Kansas. Austin Kendall, he's been okay so far. 871 yards, 6 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, though. They're a team that can be up and down. They're inconsistent, I think. But their fans are going to stick behind them throughout the year. Will they pull off some wins? Yeah. They play 11 Texas next week.
Yeah, Texas has been pretty good.
So,
Sam Ellinger, Heisman candidate.
West Virginia probably doesn't win that one. West Virginia has a trio of good wide receivers in Sam Jones, George Campbell, and T.J. Simmons.
I mean, chances.
But they play Texas. They come in. They have their bye week this week. Get things prepared. Could we see an upset? Maybe.
Is it going to happen?
No. So that's all for college football.
That's it for college football. Now it's time for the irrelevant fact of the day.
Yeah!
Now I had a fact that I figured most people in Pittsburgh at least knew, but as I was scrolling through my phone just not too long ago,
oh boy,
something popped up on my phone that I was just like, oh, okay, this is a better fact, okay? It's nothing like this day in history or anything, but it's an interesting fact. So, as we know, Steelers' new starting quarterback is Mason Rudolph. But did you know that his first name is not actually Mason? His first name is actually Brett.
What?
But he goes by Mason. This is according
to, imagine Brett Favre being called Mason Favre.
This is what I am seeing. I'm pretty sure that it is true.
It's something I was watching something yesterday. It's just like Dabo Sweeney in Clemson. His first name's not Dabo.
Yeah, it's a pretty reliable source. One that I go to a lot for that's football coverage, but
yeah, Brett Mason Rudolph the second, Brett Mason Rudolph the third.
That's what it'll be. It. How about that? Mason Rudolph, our new QB. His name is actually Brett. So if you want,
hopefully he'll be as good as the last QB name.
So
Brett.
If you are at the office or at school and whatever, and you want to secretly yell at Mason Rudolph to say, "Ah, Brett, why are you throwing more interceptions?
Brett,
throw more touchdowns.
What
at
is
home.
Your problem, Brett?
Throw more touchdowns at home." But yes, that is our. Interesting, irrelevant fact of the day that is actually kind of relevant for once.
Interesting, for sure.
Very interesting, for sure. Now,
Brett.
Now we will move on to the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Always the best.
Root
subject.
Our home team.
Say it together. The Pirates.
Yeah. It's like whenever you bowl.
Pirates now with a record of 68-91.
But hey.
At least we can't lose 100 games, right?
And also, there is a little upside to this.
There was a little upside. Golbash, tell us what happened this
week. Well, you see, as you know, the NL Central has been a tight, tight race this year. It's been anyone's game except the Pirates.
Yes.
It's been a close game. So the Cubs came into, was it a home or?
Yeah,
it was at home.
They came into PNC. I'm pretty
Pittsburghers
sure.
don't even know it was at PNC. That's how bad it's gone.
No, that's how bad the Pirates season
exactly.
has been.
Exactly.
No one knows if the Pirates are at home or away or who they're playing or who started, who's the starting pitcher, who's in the lineup.
Who's going today? Well, the Cubs came in this. It was a must-win series, and you know what the Buccos did? We rallied together, and we swept the Cubbies.
Knocking them out of playoff contention.
After nine straight losses for the Pirates. To go and sweep the Cubs that are trying to make the playoffs. What a surprise.
What a surprise. It's beautiful. We just caused.
Brilliant. It's something the Pirates would do. Such a bad season, then come and spoil it. The Cubs.
Out of all teams, the Cubs. It's,
yeah. But also got some news, 2 days ago, that there's a potential that Hurdle might be back one more year.
Oh, no.
Austin,
please.
Do you care to take that one?
Oh, God, yeah. So just seeing the Hurdle news and thinking to myself, you know, but then Huntington. Don't forget, Neil Huntington's like, well, we don't make decisions on our personnel until after the end of the season. All right. So basically what this was, at least what it probably was, is the Pirates saying, let's tell Hurdle he's good. Let's see what the media and the fans think. Yeah, because you don't really know what the fans are thinking right now, right, Neil? You don't know that the fans are saying, this team is terrible. This team needs change. Clint Hurdle's got to go, okay?
And he's back.
Wait. I have an alternate universe where Joe Maddon becomes the Pirates coach, and then Clint Hurdle becomes the Cubs general manager.
Okay, first off, no. That would never happen.
Well, you don't know that in an alternate universe.
Well, yes. This is why this is not an alternate universe.
It could be.
But the lineup that the Pirates put out there yesterday looked like it was probably from an alternate universe. Let me just read off the September lineup.
Let's hear how long I haven't kept up on baseball.
So Kevin Newman led off and batted. He led off and played shortstop and recorded a hit. Adam Frazier played second base, recorded two hits. Okay. Melky Cabrera played right field.
The Milkman.
He had three hits. The Milkman played well. Jose Osuna, who's been a nice surprise this season for the Pirates, he also had three hits along with an RBI. Little Pablo Reyes, who just likes to play in September for some reason for the Pirates. He went three for four.
He's been surprised.
Two runs scored and two RBIs. Jacob Stallings started behind the plate and batted six. Jake Elmore.
Who?
You ever heard of Jake Elmore?
No, don't think I've ever heard of Jake Elmore.
He played in left field. Eric Gonzalez played at third base. Yes, that Eric Gonzalez that runs into Starling Marte and can't field a ground ball.
Out for a majority of the season.
Your starting pitcher was Joe Musgrove, who went six strong, giving up three runs, two earned, two walks, eight strikeouts. I've never even heard this name. He's wearing number 75 as well.
Such an ugly number.
It's like a spring training number. Corbin Joseph.
Corbin Joseph?
Who? In his picture on the Scores app, he's wearing an Oakland A's hat.
All right.
Corbin Pirate's
going to pirate.
Now, it looks like the Pirates picked him up not too long ago. He was designated for assignment by the Giants about a week and a half ago. Now what about after Joe Musgrove? So Joe Musgrove started. Yeah, we know Joe Musgrove.
Yeah, everybody knows Joe Musgrove. We got him in a trade. He's a good guy.
Six
we got
strong.
Him.
Then we brought in Chris Stratton.
We know Chris Stratton.
He's been okay at times. Right? He's been great.
Uh-oh.
And then, oh, God, who comes in next? Bring out more 70 numbers. Number 79 is Williams Jerez. I don't even know if I got that pronounced
Dreads?
Right. Williams Jerez.
Williams Jerez?
Williams Jerez, I guess. I don't know, but, hey, he walked a guy, and he struck out two, and...
Unsung hero. Unsung hero.
So in his profile picture, he's wearing an Angel Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim hat. Now we'll move on. The last pitcher to pitch for the Pirates went an inning in 2/3, struck out 2, no runs, no hits. Did pretty good. Parker Markel.
Is he replacing Vasquez now?
He's only wearing number 49 now. So.
Why? He should be wearing 73.
Hey, he might be on the team. We don't know. But
yeah, but.
Well, back, if he pitched, he's obviously on the team.
Uh-huh.
I do want to throw it back to the Hurdle thing. What type of mindset does that give the fans? Hearing that Hurdle is back for another year
But it's for nostalgia purposes.
Season tickets 91. Are on the rise, right?
I mean, you're averaging at this point in the season 9,000 fans per game. You sure that's not going to be 5,000 next year? Like, come on. Like, that's just ridiculous.
It's just
helping ticket sales there, saying Clint Hurdle's back for another year that we're going to go 68 or 65 and whatever.
However many losses we can rack up this year.
We'll turn it into the Detroit Tigers here.
Wait, guys, wait.
Miami
At least we're not the Orioles.
Yeah, even the Orioles have taken somewhat of an improvement.
Well, Camden Yards is a beautiful, it's a beautiful baseball park. People.
Yeah, PNC Park is also voted definitely top three in at baseball parks in America.
When you have
you only get 9,000 fans.
When you
per
have
game.
Like five guys that are pitching right now that have numbers of 78, 71, 70, 74, and 79.
They sound like a bunch of offensive linemen.
This is spring training.
They sound like a bunch of offensive linemen.
Yeah. It's just something. Now we'll move on to a new segment collectively created by the group. But who came up? Who came up with it?
I was the originator.
Nate
the
originated.
Newest segment is called
"I'm Sorry."
It is a little bit of a knockoff. Come on, man. It's basically our bloopers or something sad.
Something we might have said last year that they might have proved us wrong.
Something we might have said or something that we think an organization would be saying to us.
So my I'm sorry is from the Pittsburgh Pirates to Joe Maddon and his Chicago Cubs. Knocking them out of the Cubs. They have not missed the postseason since 2014, and in that span a championship, but now they're not entering the postseason.
The Buccos are on the rise.
Joe Maddon might be out of a job after this year, but we will see.
All right, is this up to me?
Joe Maddon,
I'm sorry. All right, my I'm sorry goes out to Pitt. I remember saying last week that Pitt was going to get absolutely blown out. They had no shot at winning this game. UCF was just that good. And what do you know? Pitt proves me wrong, and now I'm really mad about that because I was like, yeah, UCF's gonna throw over them. I mean, which they still kind of did. I mean,
people owe a lot of I'm sorry's to Pitt football throughout the past couple years with their upsets where they had no chance, quote unquote,
and then they end up pulling crazy. It's the Narduzzi way, and that's why you watch college football because you never know. Any team can beat anyone
on college game day. Straight sweep of picks of UCF over Pittsburgh. No chance for Pitt.
No one gave Pitt a chance.
Even people here. So
no one did. So Pitt football.
I'm sorry.
Now I'm taking a little different route on my I'm sorry. I am going to make myself the Pittsburgh Steelers organization. I'm going to speak in their shoes. So you know the Steelers. Well, you know, let's go trade for Minka. Let's go get a tight end in the fifth round. Let's go trade our draft picks. Oh, wait. We're 0-3. Our quarterback's having elbow surgery. Already had surgery. Our running back likes to fumble late in games. Our offensive line without Mike Munchak can't block anybody. We traded our first round pick that could have been in the top 10. Art Rooney saying, Kevin Colbert saying to Steeler fans,
I'm sorry
for trading our first round pick. I'm sorry. Ah, oh, dear God. Now we'll move on to the Penguins.
Who are the only team that are showing some hope.
Well, yeah, they're the last team in Pittsburgh to win a championship.
Yeah, hopefully they can turn around from, again, an abysmal postseason last year getting swept.
Well, again, I don't know. I still think Islanders outplayed us in that series, but that's a story for another day.
In the preseason, the Pens are right now 2-1-2. They finish up tomorrow against the Sabres at home, 4 o'clock start. The last two games were both against the Red Wings. The first game against the Red Wings, the Wings beat us 3-2, but the Penguins had goals from defenseman Brian Dumoulin and Jared McCann. And then Penguins beat them the next game after that, 4-2, goals coming from Crosby, Derek Simone, Tanev, and Brian Ross.
Yay for preseason stats.
Yeah, so there you go. Those are the guys who are somewhat stepping up. Sid, I mean, we'll see a lot of goals from him again.
Dominic Simone.
Dominic Simone did something, right?
No. He can't be doing good. That means they're going to play him. They're going to give him minutes. Well, actually, Sullivan's going to give him minutes regardless because he likes fast, small, tiny guys like Connor Sheary.
So there's your preseason.
Brian Rust.
There's your preseason notes, 2-1-2. They finish up tomorrow. They open the season with the Buffalo Sabres after finishing the preseason with the Buffalo Sabres. Their home opener, October 3rd. That's their first game of the season as well. What's your inputs on the season? Do you think they take the Metropolitan Division, Gordy?
I personally will not think they take the Metropolitan. I believe that Washington has always been like at the top of the Metropolitan. And I think that, I mean, they've been up top there in recent years. I mean, their team's still, I mean, that core's still intact. I mean, the Pens, like, I believe the Pens will make the playoffs, but I don't think they'll be as prominent as they have been in recent years. I mean,
they'll have the underdog status.
They will definitely have the underdog status, and they will be sleeping on this team. Now, I think the Islanders are going to drop off.
Columbus really isn't going to be there this year.
I mean,
there's
the Metro is going to be a tight race, but I don't think we're going to win the Metro.
I don't think it matters if the Penguins win the Metro. As long as the Penguins make the playoffs, they should in years past. Who cares if you win the division? This is hockey. This is not the NBA where your seeding really matters.
Anything happens in the NHL playoffs.
That was just a testament to
as we saw.
I mean, actually, when it comes to the Metro, I mean. The Hurricanes are a solid team.
In the East, there's going to be a lot of different faces in the postseason, I think, this year. I mean,
like, we're going to see teams like, I think, maybe hopefully the Devils.
I think
nice, exciting teams.
The Devils. I think Montreal will be up there again competing.
You'll see the Rangers.
Rangers are definitely going to be a team to compete.
I mean, definitely.
Everybody added pieces, and the Penguins did a little bit.
But we added Brandon Tanev.
Oh, yeah.
Don't you worry.
Put him on the first
line. You had Cahoon from the Blackhawks and Galchenyuk in the Kessel trade. Different guys. I don't think it's a vast improvement.
Improvement.
I think getting rid of Mata and Kessel, I mean, they're slower guys. I mean,
Kessel's not slow.
Come on now.
I mean, Kessel is lazy, but he is not slow.
Yeah. But I think there was an improvement. I don't think they improved as much as teams like the Rangers did in getting Panarin and drafting
Capo.
The Devils.
Jack Hughes, Subban, Nikita Gusev, Taylor Hall coming
Wayne
back
Simmons.
From injury.
I mean, different teams added a lot of different players, but the Penguins,
big
they
game,
added players, but not
big
a
game
lot
Wayne.
Of.
Also, I have heard rumors that Jack Johnson is likely to be traded soon.
Who's going to take his contract?
Let's see. Maybe the Wild. The Wild love taking contracts. I mean,
they wanted Phil Kessel's contract, right?
They wanted Phil. I mean, hey, let's send him to Arizona. Let's send him to where players go to die.
Where he's going to retire and live there forever.
Yeah. All right. Now we'll move on to the recapping part of the show. We're going to go to our predictions. Yay for predictions. First one, Steelers, Bengals, Monday Night Football, Booger. McFarlane.
Booger. That terrible cat.
Booger will not be on his nice little wheeling cart anymore. He's now in the booth with Joe Tessitore.
Wait, they're throwing him in the booth?
Yeah, Booger in the booth now, man.
BNTB.
Booger in the booth.
Booger in the booth.
So I ask, who wins? Do you have a score prediction? Do the Steelers get out of the dumpster in the bottom of the AFC?
I think it would be I was about to say profanity, but it would be a travesty if the Steelers lose this game. If they lose this game, I don't think I'm going to watch a Steeler game for the rest of the year.
I don't know about that, but it would be major yikes If that makes any sense.
We do not. I swear, we haven't lost to the Bengals in like.
It's been a solid two or three years.
Steelers
usually have their way with the Bengals. My prediction for this game, Steelers 21, Bengals 19. Steelers win if they can stop the Bengals passing game. Andy Dalton has been on fire. Tyler Boyd and John Ross have been big pieces for the Bengals. They need to stop them for them to win.
You feel like, I feel like, for some odd reason, I feel like Tyler Boyd's going to have a resurgence in his old field, his old stomping grounds, you know, solid pit product. I mean, I think, don't get me wrong, I mean, the Bengals are still what? They're still 0-3, aren't they?
Yes.
I mean,
coming off a loss to the Buffalo Bills.
Buffalo's got a feeling they're 3-0.
Talking proud. But Dalton's probably going to get his passing yards, but, like, at the end of the day, I mean, I feel like it just won't be enough because they don't have a solid all-around team.
Mason Rudolph proves a lot of Steeler fans wrong, including me. That's doubting him. Mason Rudolph proves a lot of Steelers fans and people like me wrong. 28-20, two touchdowns going to James Washington. And the Steelers finally get their win. As we move on with wins, this is kind of an easy one. Will Pitt beat Delaware at home?
I think it's going to be an absolute massacre. Delaware is going to massacre Pitt. I'm just kidding. Pitt's going to absolutely roll them.
Yeah,
I mean,
Pitt will probably win by 30.
Pitt wins by 30 in this game, no doubt about that.
All right, now, first question. Will the Pirates season end? Well, yeah.
It's eventually
going to end. But will Clint Hurdles stay with the Pirates end?
Knowing our beloved Pirates,
he's
going to be here forever.
He'll find a way to stick around. We'll see him
walking into Pirate Fest with another surgery on his hip.
I'll have a nice settled down family, and you know what I'll see? Clint Hurdle extended through 2030.
85, still managing the Pirates. Neil Huntington still talking about financial flexibility at Pirate Fest with us. So Clint Hurdle probably back. Who knows? I think with the Pirates, no one really knows. I think we know what we think is going to happen,
but we don't know what's going to happen.
We don't really know what's going to happen because this team has been so unpredictable. We have no idea what can happen next. So now we'll move on to the closer, the shout out. Shout outs. Does anybody have a shout out as we close out the show?
I would just like to shout out my mom and my uncle. My uncle was listening. I mean, I heard you talking about how James Conner is going to light me up in fantasy this week. I beg to differ. Devontae Adams just got me big points. So nice try, Mom. I'll be waiting when Conner gets you negative points, Uncle Jason. Don't you worry.
My two shout outs combined is the first one is Kenny Pickett, Pat Narduzzi for pulling off this win versus UCF.
Oh, a double shout out?
And shout out to our boy, Josh Selzer. Don't think he's listening, but he's our boy. Just want to give a nice shout out.
Shout out to Josh.
Nothing's wrong with him. He's just our friend.
I want to shout out a couple volleyball teams. Pitt women's volleyball team. Been going crazy. Go to Penn State last Friday. Win 3-0. Come back at home and lose a tough one against Penn State.
They took 5 out of 8 sets.
They took 5 out of 8 sets, and they moved up to 4th in the nation. Going from 6 to 4th, Penn State went from 4 to 5. I want to shout them out. I also want to shout out my Baldwin volleyball team.
Yeah!
Girls are going to State College. Good luck to the girls at State College. It's always a great tournament going out there. Good luck to them.
And that's why we are Baldwin to the Berg.
That's why we are Baldwin to the Berg.
That's why we support our teams.
Got to remember our roots.
Shout out Baldwin football.
Good luck to the girls out there, coached by the great coach Chris Kelly.
And the great coach Adam Foote, who unfortunately almost ruined my entire high school career.
But we won't speak about that. Also, shout out to my dad, who's listening and has been texting me throughout the whole entire show.
Ray
Benton, the
Muffin.
Great
Austin Ray.
Shout out to my dog, Muffin. But that concludes
Muffin.
That is our show for this week. We're having a pretty good day so far. Hope you have a good rest of yours. I'm Austin Bechtel.
I'm Nathan Breisinger.
And I'm Andrew Paul Golvash.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.